Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. I'm Manuel Lemos, the host of the podcast. And as always, I have my permanent podcast co-host, Michael Kimsel. Hello, Michael. How are you doing?
Hello. I am fine. Notice how I didn't even try to talk over you there.
Yeah, don't worry. You can if you want. This month, we Blue, have several interesting
seven, four.
We have several interesting topics to talk about in this Lately in JavaScript podcast, episode number 8. But first, I would like to comment about a bit about certain features that were made available. Not only in the JS classes site, but also in the PHP classes site, which is the brother site of JS classes. And PHP classes site just made 12 years of age, which is quite a long...
Happy birthday to you. Cumpleaños feliz.
Oh, please don't mention all the languages. That's okay. Enough. But the important thing is that I plan to release an important feature that has been in the to-do list for many years, which addresses the need of the needs of many developers that want to share their packages, but they have many files, and the traditional way to submit packages to the PHP classes site would be to upload each file individually, and since that would take a lot of time, many authors of large packages ended up giving up and not submitting their packages. So what does this feature allows is to submit a package by importing it from a version control repository. Currently, the only CVS repositories are supported, but the support for Subversion and Git is being worked on as we speak. And the idea is that with just a few clicks, you can import a whole package, and the site will retrieve the descriptions of all the files, try to guess the types of the files, if they are images or source code or documentation or other types of files that are supported by the site. And so in the end, the user, the author that is submitting the package, has much less trouble in trying to submit the package and describing it appropriately. So the I think this is a great enhancement that hopefully will attract more packages, more developers to submit packages to the site. So this was one feature that I wanted to comment about that was released in the anniversary of the PHP classes site just a few days ago, and is also available on JS classes site. Another minor feature that I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it was you, Michael, that also commented about having the possibility for the logged user sessions to go for a longer period than the default.
Could have been me. That was probably me. Yeah.
Yeah, because it addresses one regular complaint that I was noticing some people in Twitter that were complaining that they had to register every time and when they accessed the site to download some package. Well, as I explained in a blog post that I will mention in this podcast show notes, the blog post in the PHP Classes site blog about the anniversary of the site basically explains which is something that's probably not very clear for everybody, which is the fact that the downloads, the login requirement for downloading a package is an option of each author. So the author can turn it down, turn it off, or not. If he doesn't do that, it doesn't disable that option, the site will be able to provide several things that are available to many authors, which is the ability to control which users are downloading the package, and show them how many users have downloaded the package and build a ranking. And that is one factor that encourages authors to contribute more, so they can see themselves going up in the ranking as they contribute more and more useful packages. And in the end, it benefits the users. But for users that do not understand this requirement or are not aware, for some reason, they did not want to read the explanations in the site FAQ, they will rant and complain. And there is this user in the Twitter that I noticed. He was complaining that is every time he went to go to the PHP Classes site, he had to register again. Well, we only have to register one time, but since he actually did not have patience to remember his previous account, he was trying to create a new account and needlessly create new registrations. And that happened because the last time the user was accessing the site, he was not he was no longer logged in because it passed more than 1 month. So with this new feature that allows you to be logged at least for 1 year, you are given options to be logged for 1 year or just 1 month or 1 week or 1 day or just for the session. You can control for how long you want to be logged. But since the default is 1 year, hopefully I expect less people to complain about having to register again, which is totally needless. So this is one feature that will also benefit the PHP, either the PHP Classes site and the JS Classes site users. But these are just a few features that I have been working on. I will also continue to work on other features that will benefit, will promote better the work of authors that publish in their site, get them more visibility. And so for now, those that want to learn about how exactly this CVS import that is going to also be Subversion and Git import, they can just read the blog post in the PHP Classes site, and they will be able to submit large packages without so much effort as before. But this is just to comment about these features that affect also the PHP Classes site. But we are going to move on with our podcast with some interesting news that happened this time in the JavaScript world. One of them is related with a very interesting library named pdf.js.
Okay, I'm throwing in here now, just gonna jump in. I thought it was a really interesting release. Now, did you play with it at all?
Not really. I did not have time. I just realized it just a few days ago. But from what I know from the PDF format, it's not a trivial library. I did not browse the code yet, but I figure it is not a trivial thing to do, but it's feasible. because PDF, from what I know, it can involve encryption and compression, and both of those aspects implemented in JavaScript, I figure it takes a lot of code to be written, and although there are libraries for other languages that could be ported to JavaScript, but I figured that it was not a trivial effort. What do you think, Michael?
Well, I don't think that, from what I remember, I don't think there were any stated plans to support the encryption aspect, at least, again, stated. There may be something in the works for later on.
Right.
I had looked at the code earlier. I'm pulling it up right now again to look at because... No, sorry. I didn't see anything stated, but I actually see a crypto.js file here. And as of 40 minutes ago, there was some change to pdf.js itself, the core. It's 4,700 lines.
Wow.
4,335 software lines of code, SLOC count. And some of the initial comments that I'd heard about the code, well, people's assumption about the code was that, well, you know, 4,000 lines, at the time it was 3,500 lines of JavaScript. Oh, it's just going to be a mess. And there were some other people that defended it in one of the forums I was in, and they said, no, it's actually very well constructed and very well thought out. And looking at it here, just browsing through it, it seems to me that that's the case. Certainly, it's a very complex thing that it's doing, but the code seems to be fairly well structured. It seems to be taking good advantage of a lot of JavaScript. It does seem to be variable names are clean. There are lots of blocks of binary, sort of like binary blobs of data, probably header data, things like that, or special characters as that was listed. So, you know, some of that accounts for some of the line count as well, too. But it is, it looks like there's quite a lot of, there's blocks of how to, blocks of encoding, brace left, brace right, ASCII tilde, a lot of the common encoding
you
terms
mean to
that
parse
are used
the,
in PDFs. How to parse standard encoding, how to parse win ANSI encoding. So font embedding and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure is going to be there's going to be a lot of work for them to do. But by most accounts that I'd read after some of the initial criticism is that it's quite an impressive feat of engineering that's been done so far.
Oh, I suppose they still have a long way to go, but just the fact they have decided to go for it, it seems quite brave, because I have a superficial knowledge of the PDF format. It's basically an evolution of PostScript. PostScript is an actual language, and PDF just turns certain functions into built-in functions of PostScript became built-in. If you use, for instance, GhostScript, the actual PDF parser is just a PostScript filter. So they just add filters for all sorts of parsing of document structures. But for using a PostScript engine to parse PDF, it's quite easy. But doing that from scratch in JavaScript is nothing trivial, I think.
No, it's not. So hats off to you guys.
Right.
It is Andreas Gall and Chris Jones are, looks like, at least the two initial guys behind the PDF.
Right.
JS.
And it seems that one of the goals is to have a built-in PDF rendering engine that does not rely on plugins or anything else outside the browser. So you could even probably do some special PDF processing with these libraries. Because I think there are some variants of PDF format, like that those PDF forms. And, if they get to that point of supporting those things, they have really gone very far.
I'm wondering, too, what the plans are for allowing, partially what you're talking about, things like PDF forms and whatnot, programmatic access in the browser to PDF data and to PDF forms. But I'm thinking later on there may be some more interesting things that could be done that maybe aren't supported in standard PDF APIs right now, but text extraction, maybe real-time.
Yeah, generic reading, parsing.
Yeah, reading of the text and maybe on-the-fly translation of the text as well, too. So from that PDF, read it in and offer translation services right in the PDF.
I think if they actually also do the opposite, which would be to couple a PDF writer library, they could have a full PDF editing feature right in your browser.
That would be really slick too.
Yeah, certainly. And certainly will provide a very powerful document editing engine. Although I think that would be a very long way to go because it's quite complicated.
At least a few weeks.
with how many developers?
Well, I would say the reverse might be easier in some ways. The creation of the PDFs.
Yes, the creation, yes, subset. But but the whole editing, I mean, providing...
runtime editing, yes, editing. I was thinking just creation is probably somewhat easier.
The visual editing, I think. By the time you realize you are developing a real world processor built in your browser, not that those types of built-in HTML editors. But, kudos to the developers. I think the list here shows at least 4 or 5 people. And as the project gathers more attention, I suppose they will attract more developers to contribute with other parts that are necessary to make this a complete PDF engine. Well, we'll see. Now, moving on to another interesting project, JavaScript related. The name of the project is another good opportunity for Michael to demonstrate his knowledge in spelling foreign names. I mean, non-English names.
It's the Kaha. Are you talking about Kaha?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the name comes from Spanish, a word that means box. And the idea of this Caja project is to provide a security level to JavaScript code that you may embed from third parties, that you are not sure if you can trust they will not do something that can compromise the security of your sites, your web pages. And this is a project, from what I understood, is from Google people themselves. It's hosted in Google Code. But the way I see this project is that they probably intend to use it widely in some other project that I don't know what could be, but I have a few ideas. The project, the idea of being able to embed, let's say, foreign JavaScript is the basis for embedding widgets and other types of elements in pages. The new thing about that this library can provide is to avoid the traditional approach, which is the use of inline frames, iframes, to embed that code in the pages. Because when you use iframes, you can use they have a separate domain. In that case, they will not be able to have access to cookies of the main page that is on which the widgets are being loaded. And in that case, you are not risking yourself to embed code in your pages that could perform cross-site scripting attacks. And the possibility of embedding code, JavaScript code, that could be used to embed widgets without using iframes, I think opens space. I don't know what is the end of this Google project, but I think they may want to do something like Facebook does, but in a different way, which is to embed third-party applications in the Facebook site. But in the case of Facebook, that is done using I'm not sure if they use iframes.
I think it can use iframes.
Yeah.
But it can also just take the data and take your output and plop it into. Well, I guess it is still do an iframe either way. A couple of thoughts that I had on this when you're talking about Google's motivation for this, and one feels to me, assuming that this is actually, it looks like it is, there's some Google people involved, is that they have every incentive to try to get people to make it safe to embed this stuff and make it easy to embed these sorts of things. And to whatever extent they can make this work great in Chrome and get more people to do that, that's one more way of getting more Chrome adoption and more Google control over when and how these sorts of things are done. As opposed to, I mean, certainly Firefox will probably follow suit. Other people may follow suit, Safari and so on afterwards. But
right.
They've got a lot of business incentive to drive this, and it'll be interesting to me to see how well this plays in the mobile space as well too, or what effect this has. Because if I can start embedding stuff, if I have a nice mobile browser or tablet browser, and I can start embedding widgets, that's one more blow against the native app notion. We have to have native apps for a tablet.
Exactly.
So I think there's some cool tech stuff going on, but the political motivations to me are maybe a bit more intriguing. It's easier to speculate about that too.
Right. Since we don't know exactly what is the motivation of the project, at least I did not find any information. We can only speculate. But your point of targeting this with the goals of the Chrome project to get more people to develop in-browser applications is one interesting possibility. It could be the main motivation, and just go back a bit for those that are not familiar what this library does. From what I understood, they audit the JavaScript code that you have there, and somehow they alter it or intercept the calls that they do to certain functions, certain objects, to deny access to certain objects. For instance, if you don't want to allow AJAX requests, XML, HTTP requests, you can disable that. So probably there are other types of control. I don't know if they probably intercept the access to the current document cookies, which is the source of cross-site scripting attacks. And but back to the motivations. When I mentioned Facebook, I figure that probably this is all a big speculation. Probably there is that a rumor that Google is working on their own big social network to compete with Facebook.
Orkut.
Yeah, Well, Orbit is basically dying, from what I understood. It only has adoption in Brazil and India, and it's losing big time to Facebook.
Yeah.
So whether there will be a replacement for a competitor, a new competitor for Facebook or not, we don't know. But the idea of this library to audit JavaScript that can be embedded in pages of an eventual social network site, it certainly tackles one of the big advantages of Facebook, which is the ability to embed third-party applications.
Sure.
That's what it crossed my mind. Whether it is that or not, we don't know yet. We have to wait and see. Still, for the rest of us developers, though, that don't have anything to do with the Google on Facebook or whatever social networks, the implicit competition that goes on there. There are plenty of good uses. You can also have your own ecosystem of applications that you could embed in your own sites. It crossed my mind, for instance, having some support to embed third-party applications in JS classes and PHP classes that would allow, for instance, authors to enhance the services, the features that they provide in the their own packages pages, and somehow extend what the site provides. And just like I figured that could be an interesting possibility for JS classes and PHP classes sites, other people may also have similar ideas with their own sites. So yeah. If you haven't considered that possibility, now you may be wondering that despite the technical challenge of developing this project of securing JavaScript based content that may be embedded in pages, you can also think about other possibilities, just like I described for sites that can have contributions from other developers outside from the company that manages each of the sites. So I think we will have to wait and see, and we'll be keeping an eye on this, the evolution, and specifically the applications of this library Google Caja. But yeah. Now moving on to the a regular section of the podcast, we're going to talk about the latest objects in the JS class site. Michael, objects do you think would be worth mentioning this time?
Well, there were two that struck my mind, struck my fancy here. One was a Skype status, which is a kind of a small class that just lets you embed the status of a Skype user. Generally, it would be yourself, but you could easily display if you're online, offline, available, whatever your status would be.
Yeah.
That is Artur Sosin, but I don't see. Oh, Latvia. I think we.
He's a regular contributor.
Yeah. Thank you, Artur. And then the other one that sounded neat. Now, actually, I haven't. I wanted to look at it yesterday. I've not had a chance to play with it, but it sounds very computer science-y, and that is the fuzzy logic from. I'm going to say the name wrong. Wojtek Jarski. Jarseki. Sorry, Jarseki. from Poland.
I'm sure your spelling is wrong, but don't worry.
My spelling is what? What did I say wrong? Is it Jarsecki?
These Eastern Europe languages certainly have a different way of spelling them, but don't worry.
Well, I grew up in Detroit, and we had a very large Polish population there.
You are sure that's the right spelling?
Well, that would have been we would have said Jarsecki or Jarsecki, and we had a lot of Bishevskis in our neighborhood. So, well, not a lot. There was one family, but everybody got to figure out how to say their name. So I should have been able to say that more accurately. But the idea behind this is a way of introducing fuzzy logic controllers. And I was it struck me as, hey, I want to see what this does. And I actually looked at the code and tried tracing through it. And it's a little mathematically above my head, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's not a little bit more complex than the average class that I look at in JavaScript. But I think if you're into fuzzy logic and logic stuff in general, this might be an interesting one just to look at. I used to take logic classes in college. I probably should be a bit more up to date on that, but that was many, many years ago.
Yeah, this is basically a component for simulating complex systems that depend on many conditions, and you have to evaluate the condition, the different conditions at different periods. And the author of the class, I won't dare to try to spell his name because I'm sure I'll be wrong. But he also submitted a PHP class that it's basically the PHP version of this JavaScript object. And it's quite interesting because it is from a person that is from a very specialized area. And he knows that area very well. And this level of components that we are seeing both in JS classes and PHP classes sites really demonstrates how advanced and sophisticated could be the components and skilled are the authors that contribute them. And I'm sure somebody from this area of complex systems will appreciate these components at least more than I could, because I'm not from that area. I probably would not know all the applications on which this could be used. But kudos for WashTech, if that is the right spelling, for his contributions. We hope to see more advanced contributions from him in the future. And just a side comment, WashTech is age is 61, which just demonstrates that you are never too young nor too old to contribute and share your work in the PHP classes and JS classes sites, and to the benefit of a large community.
Awesome. Awesome to hear. Great. Yeah.
By the way, you also commented about the Skype status object.
Yes.
I just wanted to add an additional comment, which is the fact that there are also very simple HTML snippets that you can put in a page to evaluate the status of a Skype user. The difference, the enhancement that Arthur's implemented with this object is that it keeps polling the server, the Skype status server, to update the icon that is shown that demonstrates the online status of the user. So it's because those traditional snippets, HTML snippets that you put on in a page that show the Skype status, they just don't update until you refresh the page. So that was the additional feature that I want to highlight on that component. Now, as for my part, I would like to highlight the AutoPop component, AutoPop new field object that was contributed by Joseph from the United States. And this is a very interesting component that addresses a recurring need. For instance, when you have a form with several inputs to edit records of for instance, users or something else. And what this component allows is that it can show a user interface, for instance, line-oriented, on which you see one record per line. And if you want to add a new record, it just replicates, creates a copy of the inputs on the previous row, just leaves them empty, and automatically adjusts the names of the inputs so they are not the same as the in the previous row. So that could be used to implement those kind of inline record editors, like for instance, when you show a lot of records in on a table, you can just add another row, and this component does something automatically for you.
Yep, I'm looking at Joseph's online demo of this right now, and you choose something, you say first name, last name, and after you tab out of the last name, it just adds another line with the same fields, just another row of that. Joseph, if you're listening, something that would make this even more awesome is to add an automatic delete button. Because if I tap far too far and I don't need that row anymore, let me automatically, or let me click something to delete it. That would really, really slick too.
Yeah. I also like to add another comment on that is that over time we got used to develop with a server-side language, in our case, mainly PHP. Sorry. And we often encounter this situation where we have to design a page that lets you edit records of users. And if you can edit them directly on a table that shows them, that would be fine. And I've been developing certain plugins for a forms class. Actually, it's almost a framework because it's a quite large set of classes. And I have a specific plugin for implementing CRUD interfaces. I mean, create, retrieve, update, and delete.
Yep.
And I've been always trying to figure a solution that could implement a more user-friendly interface that would not require to do a refresh the page to load load it with inputs that will allow you to edit an existing record. And at least in this component addresses the need to add a new line. So it would be great if it could also not only address the need for creation of new records, but also deletion, as you mentioned. And while you are at it, you could also implement the update functionality, which would involve some probably some Ajax-based communication, I think. But other than that, the other component that I'd like to mention is this keyboard shortcut by Arthur Sossins. Again, he's a very frequent contributor.
He's a very busy boy.
Yeah, and since he's submitted so many packages so far, 14, he has attracted so many users, so now he is number one of the week in terms of download packages. And all time, it is number two. So very soon it became number one. But this is an interesting thing to mention is this package. What it does is that it reads a string with a specification with keyboards keyboard sequences, key sequences that you want to detect when the user is pressing. For instance, if you want to detect Control Alt A, you can pass a string that defines that sequence, and it will register an event handler when that sequence, when that those keys are pressed while you are in a page. It will call your event handler function that you have registered, and this seems to be quite useful. For instance, you have if you want to implement games on which you want to allow users to let's say define the keys by which they can
win.
use to play the game to do certain actions. You can make it more configurable and eventually user friendly, and this is quite interesting. And kudos again to Arthurs for his continued good contributions.
Yeah,
I hope he never stops. I'm sure he is very busy, and probably I think we should maybe have him in a future show so he can talk a bit.
Sure.
His own work, so he can tell us the secret of his productivity. Okay. Now moving on towards the end of our show, Steve, we have a section on which Michael will comment on the upcoming issues of JS Mag magazine. Michael,
oh goodness!
What would
yes, I always seem to fall down here because even I've had a month to prepare and I'm still not quite prepared. But we have that's June. Let's look at July at 65. Mike Schwartz has another series, continues his series looking at server-side development. He's looking at the V8 engine. Dino Gambone is wrapping up. That's the status here. I think he's hopefully got a few more in his series on game development. Initially, he was looking at, a certain type of game, and we've been talking a bit about expanding on. He's actually got some code out on GitHub, and he's got a guy that's been doing some graphics for him, so he's making more of a graphic game with server-side JavaScript, and he's going to be inviting, actually he's on Twitter, he's inviting some people to start forking on GitHub, and he's going to feed some of that back into future articles, which would be interesting. We had actually Demont Jean-Baptiste from last month. We'd actually talked about his GMAP 3 plugin on this very show, and I'd reached out to him and said, hey, would you like to come on and talk about, or not come on, but write about the GMAP 3 plugin, and he's actually done that. So he's going to be covering that. And we've got a couple other things coming up that I haven't finalized yet, but we may have something on the GNOME shell. GNOME 3 recently came out, and you can edit most of your desktop just modifying JavaScript. GNOME, GNOME, from
is
Linux.
Is it related with the
JavaScript?
Is it related with the GNOME library that exists for Linux?
I think so. I haven't read the full article yet, but it's an article on scripting your desktop with JavaScript, scripting your GNOME desktop. So, you know, we've definitely got some things in the pipeline there. So that's what's coming up. We should be out ideally on Friday, but I think because of the holiday, it may not be out till next Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, I see. It's holiday Friday? I was not aware.
It's a holiday weekend coming up, so sometimes we don't actually put something out on the holiday weekend till after the holiday.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, one thing that I wanted to ask you is about you always comment about the articles, but some people are not really aware about how they can acquire the magazine. Is it issue by issue or a subscription?
Yes, you can go to jsmag.com. We take PayPal and Google Checkout, which covers, between those two, covers most of the world. You can buy single issues. So if just one, if there's an article in one piece, on one article you like, you can buy just that. There are subscriptions, and I may help to clear up here. A subscription is simply a discounted price for buying 12 consecutive articles or 12 consecutive issues, which generally works out to a year because it's a monthly monthly piece. So you can start today and say, give me 12 starting today and go 11 in the future. Or you can start back from issue 1, or you can start from issue 7 and just say, give me that one and 12 forward. And there's a 10% discount on that.
Yeah, this is quite interesting. Actually, the question was about the price. What are the current prices for those that are interested to acquire?
Just under $5. It's $4.99 per issue. Yeah. And then it's $53, I think, if you buy 12.
Oh, okay. And another question that I had, do you plan to have maybe a version for tablets now that there are big hype?
I've had a Kindle for a couple of years, and I tried to get this to look good on the Kindle, and it just didn't. Other people have had better success getting some technical journals onto Kindle. There seems to be, I think, a bit of a growing demand for it. So something, actually, I have on my to-do list to evaluate sometime in June or July to look at other publishing. That said, EPUB or Mobi or something. But that said, it comes in PDF, and they look pretty darn good on iPads, which I have an iPad as well, too. And the PDF renders just fine. It's very readable on iPad. Once the iPad came out, for me, there was a bit less of an urgency. I have some people say I'd like it on EPUB, but I also have other people saying, hey, I just download this and stick it in my iTunes library, and it shows up on my iPad, and it looks fine.
The question was if it would be available for purchasing in via the Apple Store, whatever is it called. I think they now support subscription.
They do. I'm not going to mess with that. They require they require a pretty big cut, and there's just feels like there's some hoops to jump through. I'm not sure that enough of my audience is really. I mean, certainly a lot of people have gadgets and whatnot, but the people that we're targeting tend to be people who live in the browser most of the time anyway.
Well, I don't know if it makes sense, but consider selling it for an higher price for via the Apple Store just to make up for the cut that Apple takes.
I'm not sure that you're allowed to do that.
Oh, have different prices?
Yeah, you have to have the same or lower prices on the iPad Store.
Oh.
So, I'm not sure for the audience that we're targeting and for what we're putting out. If we were to do a more interactive style publication, it might make more sense to do that for tablets. But right now, we're still living in the past doing the other PDFs. They are still very much laid out for printing on your printer.
Right. Well, it would be probably an interesting idea to have a more interactive magazine, but I don't know if this case what could be the benefits of making it more interactive. Maybe you could simulate the code that is running in the example.
Possibly. Possibly for the JS stuff. Video interviews, maybe video tutorials, but I still think a lot for developers, a lot of that stuff is going to be more practical on a desktop rather than on current tablets. Now, that may change in the future with future tablet
capabilities. Well, I don't know. Personally, I think that tablets are a bit a cut-down version of notebooks. It's tablets are notebooks without keyboards, and which makes them a bit less comfortable to use in many situations. But since they are now the new thing, a lot of people are getting them as if they could not live without them. But that's just a personal opinion.
Sure.
Okay, with that remark, we end up here our Lately in JavaScript podcast, episode number 8. Michael, thank you for coming. I hope you can continue coming many times in the future.
I'd love to.
And bring all your good insights about this. So from me, that's all for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.